The history of the Maya, clans, power, the Mayan social groups. Each Maya belonged to two blood groups, the matrilineal group, descended from the mother, and the patrilineal group, descended from the father. Each individual had both a name given by and inherited from the mother and another taken from the father, which would mean, for example, in my case, my mother was a Hoff, my father was a Packet. So it would read Hoff Packet, born from, sired by. It's almost like your pedigree for a horse. And then you would get a third name, which would indicate something that you had become, the strong, the swift, etc., and so on. But you could easily trace your genealogies that way. Now, property could only be inherited from the father. Like the king's crown, belongs only to be passed down through patrilineal lines. Members of a patrilineal line were expected to help one another in times of need. For example, they would buy out a relative who had been thrown into slavery because of debt or crime. The patrilineal group also held lands in common. According to Bishop Delenda, each family among the common people was allocated 400 square feet of land to farm. This unit of land was known as the Unic. Scholars believe the matrilineal and the patrilineal groups also used to control marriages between relations, between relatives. For example, a man might marry his mother's brother's daughter or his father's sister's daughter, but he would be barred from making other particular marriages. Alongside and cutting across these blood groups, there are strong class divisions. It's extremely prestigious to be able to trace your lineage on both your mother and father's side back across many generations to a noble family. Indeed, the word for a noble, almehen, translates as man whose bloodline can be read on both sides. That's getting a lot out of a few letters. Among members of the nobility were wealthy farmers who owned their own land, prosperous merchants, priests, leading warriors, and all those held office within the political hierarchy, including counselors, judges, and governors, were members of the nobility. The most important positions were filled by close members of the ruler's own blood group. The chiefs were carried in a litter decorated with plumes and borne on the shoulders of strong men. Scribes also occupied an elevated society and position. They were leading members of the king's retinue. Most cities probably had a school for scribes, were loyal and noble children, such as younger sons and daughters of the king, or his children by secondary wives and concubines, would learn the complex skills of reading and writing Mayan hieroglyphics. Literacy was probably not widespread amongst the general population. Scholars estimate that perhaps 1 in 4 of the Maya could read, and probably far fewer could write. Archaeologists have found attempts at writing by non-elite scribes in minor establishments, in minor settlements, or on bricks that were fired at Comolco. But these are not comprehensible because those responsible had clearly not mastered the difficult technique required. All they could manage was a crude imitation of the fine calligraphy found on carvings and ceramics produced by the elite scribes. Beneath the nobility were the free workers, who were allotted the Hun Unic, on which to grow their maize. They were liable to pay taxes in the form of crops to a tax collector. The priests, who played such a vital role in reading in the stars and patterns of history to determine the correct planting times, were supported with crops from the field. The farmers probably saw the food sent to the temple as a gift to the gods, eaten by the priesthood on their behalf. Some men worked the land on behalf of the wealthy. There was also a large class of slaves. Many were men and women captured in war, for in general, only the more noble amongst captives were sacrificed, while the poorer prisoners were put into slavery. Others were individuals from Mayan homelands who had been brought to slavery by wrongdoing or poverty. Slaves also were traded across the vast network of routes that crisscrossed the Mayan lands. For most, there was no way out of their condition, and their children also would be slaves, although it was possible to buy individuals out of slavery. Female slaves worked drawing water from wells, dyeing cloth, and grinding maize. Male slaves were put to work as laborers, fishermen, and carriers of cargo for merchants. The males were given an ill-kept appearance, with ragged clothes and roughly cut short hair. And Mayan architecture and city planning reflected and reinforced these class divisions. In general, the king and his retinue and the nobility lived close to the center of the city. The Mayan city was usually centralized on temple complexes and its fine plazas. Around these were group palaces and homes for the elite nobles, with the merchants and their other professionals living in smaller dwellings beyond them, and in humble homes of the working people even further out. So this is what you have as your Mayan structure here. It was also reinforced by clothing requirements. You had limits on what each caste could wear for clothing. If you wore the wrong style of clothing, they could be a problem. It also meant when people came from another city to visit yours, you could tell who they were because they had a different dress code. So this is the situation. And you can see, again, discussing what happens at the end. If you decapitate and remove the elite leadership that's doing all of the ceremonies and whatever, it would be pretty difficult to keep these towns in place. The sources for this are The Maya by Cole, The Civilization of the Maya by Anaquin, The Popo Vuh, In Search of the Maya by Brunhaus, Outline Dictionary of Mayan Glyphs by Gates, Incidents in the Travels of the Yucatan by Stevenson, New World Archaeology by Scientific American, Aztec and Maya by Phillips, Yucatan Before and After the Conquest by Delanda, Rise and Fall of the Maya by Mayan Civilization by Thompson, and Maya History and Religion by Thompson. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.